Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We're streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. And we are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Next Thursday is the first round of the NFL draft. It is so close. We can almost taste it. And joining us now is ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck and, of course, the head coach of the Ensworth Tigers. Tim, appreciate you for joining us and always appreciate your insight every single week on Tuesdays at noon. You've been breaking down the quarterbacks. You watch the film. You know the quarterbacks probably better than anybody. Are there four quarterbacks worthy of going in the first four picks? And based off of what you heard, what's the likelihood of four quarterbacks going in the first four picks?
Well, in terms of, you know, are they worthy of going yet? I really think that if a quarterback is good enough to go in the first round, then I actually think that he's good enough to go in the first four picks. I'll kind of use Matt Ryan as the example for this. There were a lot of people like, you can't take Matt Ryan at one, but it was okay for Atlanta to take him at three. Like, to me, that type of logic doesn't make sense. Like, now I get it. Look, I'm not a draft Nick and to say that, hey, look, this is the best corner that we've seen on the board in 10 years or best offensive tackle we've seen on the board in 10 years or anything like that. I just think this, if you're going to draft a quarterback in the first round, what you are saying is, look, we expect this guy to be a decade long starter for us and play at a winning level. So should JJ McCarthy be the fourth overall pick if you went through it all? Look, I'm sure that you would have people say, well, no, I wouldn't take J.J. McCarthy with the fourth overall pick if, you know, this tackle's available or this defensive end's available, whatever it may be. But, like, to me, if you were going to take J.J. McCarthy at 12 because you thought that he would be a quarterback that's a starter for a decade and play at a winning level, then of course you could take him at four. So I think I look at it a little bit differently than some people do. And maybe it's because, you know, I'm not saying like, hey, let me look at this offensive tackle and you know, basically say, you're not going to get another tackle like this next year. I think that if you're a quarterback that is that you have a first round grade on, then you really could take him at any spot. Like, that's how I feel about that position and the fifth-year option and the impact it can have on your franchise.
Makes sense to me, and I'll extend that to maybe the first round as a whole, or first-round graded players, rather. How many elite, franchise-changing, game-changing, game-altering type of players do you think are in this draft?
Yeah, well, it's interesting, right? So, however you evaluate these guys, like, I mean, I think that, you know, there's 32 picks in the first round. I think if there's 10 real, you know, game changers, like, it's a good year. You know, I think, and I don't want to be sitting here like, you know, poo-pooing the draft. Like, it's not a big deal. Obviously, the NFL has done an amazing job, you know, creating non-events and making them big, huge events. Right. But look, we know that, like, the hit rate on certain positions is just bad. And we know it's, you know, better at other positions. So, like, for example, like, if you were to look at guard, like, there's a better hit rate at guard than there is, you know, at wide receiver. There's a better hit rate at tight end than there is, you know, at corner. And so, like, how many guys, you know, Caroline, to be honest with you, like, if there are 10, that means it was a good year for general managers. Like, I just think that that's the world we live in, you know, in terms of most of the times, you know, we're getting it wrong in the first draft.
We'll talk with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Now, Tim, I think it was Willie that sent this article this morning, either Willie or Caroline. I didn't see the name attached to it, but it was an interesting article. on The Athletic from Alec Lewis, and it talked about teams drafting and how they draft, and it's a really interesting and good article. But some of the premises was, you know, is it better to move up in the draft, move back in the draft, accumulate picks, or just draft that one guy you believe is a stud? With you being in your space and you talking with GMs around the league, what are they saying in regards to draft, whether to move up or move back? What is better? What would be beneficial to some of the guys that you've spoken with, some of the GMs that you've spoken with?
I think most guys, because they understand the, you know, the unpredictability of drafting players, they want more picks. And so moving back a couple spots, picking up a fifth rounder, moving back a couple spots, picking, like, that matters. Because, like, you know, when you draft, you know, Kevin Byard, you know, in a later round, well, if you messed up the first round, you got the ability to say, yeah, but look what I did in the later round. You know what I mean? Like, check that guy out. Most guys want more picks because like, if we, like, just think about certain general managers and how we talk about them. Hey, John Lynch, hey, like, he drafted Brock Purdy. Like, he also drafted Trey Lance. You know mm-hmm. what I mean?
So yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, the wins, you know, and some of it's just the narrative in general and that type of thing. But, like, you can tout the wins. You can tout the good players. But it's when you – when you get somebody wrong in a critical spot and you don't have other picks to counterbalance the getting that wrong, then, you know, then it gets you in trouble. Right. And so, like if you, you know, if it's like, you can get a lot right, but if, you know, if you're just getting a couple things right and you get Josh Freeman and Aurelius Ben wrong, then you're out. Like, it's just like, that's how this works. And I think that most guys would rather move back, have more picks, because you're bound to hit on somebody in that environment.
Yeah, and the reason that I brought it up, Tim, is because obviously the Titans are in a space where, being a seventh pick, where they can essentially move back and still possibly get, you know, the player that they wanted and some. That's why, you know, I posed that question to you, because do the Titans stay put? Even if, you know, Alt's there, or if he's not there, or do they move back in the draft a few spots and still be able to get the guy that they want?
Yeah, and I think this is the biggest story. The biggest story of the draft every year is not, like, you know, we make it out to be, you know, this is how everybody has these players rated and that type of thing. I think it's really understanding what somebody else feels like they need to draft. Right, so let's just say the Titans are going offensive line. They know they're going offensive line. They've got their guy. But I think it's understanding, you know, what everybody else is doing. Like, all right, hey, Minnesota wants to move, but, like, they want to move because they want a quarterback. Mm-hmm. You know, Denver wants to move because they want a quarterback. Like, I think understanding that part of it is really the bigger story, because if you can move back one or two spots, get the guy that you were going to take at six anyway, but yet pick up you know, a fourth rounder because you just moved, you know, a little bit, like, and, oh, by the way, that fourth rounder, you know, turns into a tight end that becomes a Pro Bowl player one day. Well, like, now you're doing what you should be doing, right? Like, that to me is just, like, getting the guy you want and moving because somebody else's need is different. Like, I feel like that's really what the draft is about.
Now, every year, Tim, we talk with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, and, I'm sorry, I didn't mention it, Tim, and head coach of the Innsworth Tigers. You know, you see teams do this every year, or you see players, this happen to players every year, where they're projected to get drafted top five, top 10, and then all of a sudden – you get past 5, you get past 10, you get past 15, and you still see this guy just sitting in, and all of a sudden he slips out of the first round, where before the draft, just about everybody was saying this guy, I'm hearing this guy's a first round, this guy's a, which guy do you think, or do you think it will be a guy that, not named J.J. McCarthy, is there a guy that can fall far in the draft, out of the first round, or just far in the first round, guys that they have projected like top 10 picks?
Yeah, that's a good one. And honestly, I feel like it's always a surprise, you know, every single year. Look, I don't think McCarthy's fallen out of the first round. I don't think there's any shot for that. And really, I don't feel like McCarthy would end up outside, you know, the top 12. You know, like when we look at the quarterbacks, I think it's a little bit different this year in that, like, I don't think there's any shot. Like to me, if Drake May fell to six, like, that would be – like, that to me is, like, a bigger story than a guy, you know, Drew Locke falling out of the first round, you know? Like to me, if Drake May goes all the way to six
– and the Giants, like, pick at six, right?
Yeah. Like, if he goes all the way there, like, that would be the stunner to me. And really, I would say if Drake May gets past three – and somebody, you know, moved to four to get him, like, that to me, I feel like would be huge. I feel like that'd be a big deal. You know, those other quarterbacks that are talked about as potential first round draft picks, you know, Michael Penix Jr. or Bo Nix, you know, guys like that, you know, I think it's a little different in that, you know, it's already kind of been out there. They weren't invited to New York, they didn't, you know, basically they're not going to New York. I think there's an expectation that, you know, they would not be first round draft picks. And I think that there's probably enough reason to understand why that is for either guy. To me, this year it feels like, at least at the quarterback position, the surprise would be if, you know, I'm making this up, the surprise would be if, you know, Jordan Travis goes before Bo Nix. You know, like, to me, like, and look, as, you know, Titans fans have seen, like, look, think about, you know, Malik Willis and how that ended up. Like, that was a big, you know, surprise on draft day. I think Will Levis, same way, you know, a big surprise on draft day. So we've seen it happen. It won't surprise me if it happens somewhere. I just don't feel like it's in the first round.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. Tim, just referencing the article that D. Mace brought up, another interesting factor was talking about the human element that might have you looking past what the data shows. It's just balancing the, you know, the eye test and the human element with the time-tested stuff. And you can't, there's no perfect way to do it, but it talks a lot about the emotions of a coach or a scout who might have a little more self-interest, or even a position coach that's saying, I've got to have this guy. But it's really interesting how many things have to go right for you to actually have a good draft.
Oh, absolutely. And you're totally right. I mean, just, you know, been around it long enough now to, like, hear draft day stories about, you know, various things. Like my brother's a good example. Everyone always linked him to Mike Holmgren, because, you know, Holmgren was the head coach in Green Bay when he was, you know, drafted to Green Bay, and then was the head coach in Seattle when Seattle traded with Green Bay to get Matthew. But Holmgren didn't want to draft Matthew. It was Andy Reid that wanted to draft Matthew. And so, you know, like, the, you know, hearing kind of how some of these things play out. Like, I remember hearing a story talking to some guys at the Giants about Mathias Kiwanuka. Like, the Giants had traded back. I think they traded with Pittsburgh. Say they were picking at, like, 19 or something. They had traded. Pittsburgh had won the Super Bowl the year before. And so they trade, you know, Pittsburgh moves up to 19 or in the 20s or somewhere. And the Giants moved back to pick 32. And basically it was because they were picking around, you know, 19, 20. And Mathias Kiwanuka was the highest rated player on their board. But they had, you know, Michael Strahan and Justin Tuck and OCU Mignora. And it was like, look, we don't need another one of these defensive ends, you know, edge players. And so, like, let's trade back. And so they trade back, and all of a sudden they get to 32,
And it was like, wait a second, Mathias Kiwanuka is still on the board. He was our highest rated player at 19. He's for sure our highest rated player on the board sitting here at 32. Like, now we're just going to go ahead and take him. Well, and like, Willie, to your point, like, fast forward a few years, Giants win a Super Bowl with this like NASCAR package of rushing the passer and getting after Tom Brady. Well, who do they do it with? They did it with those four guys and Mathias Kiwanuka being part of that mix. They didn't even want to draft him, but they kind of were like, look, we're wasting our money in our scouting department if we don't just go ahead and take this guy at pick 32.
I feel like we talked about this with you last year, but I'm curious how your thoughts maybe have evolved after another year of this. With the COVID factor, and there's a lot of older college athletes in every sport, but definitely in football, I was looking at Bo Nix, I believe, is already 24. Drake May, for example, only 21. Jaden Daniels is 23. Caleb Williams, a little younger, 22. J.J. McCarthy is only 21. I shouldn't say never. I rarely hear, when I hear Mel Kiper and the different people, Lewis Riddick talking, for example, this morning on debating about these quarterbacks, they usually don't bring up the age. I feel like that is a big thing for me personally. If I were a scout, I would be considering the age of the player. But where do you stand on that? Do you think that is evolving some, or are they just looking at the player where he is right now in at the stage of life?
I think it's a huge deal, and I was screaming at the top of my lungs on it about Kenny Pickett when he came out. Kenny Pickett was older than every quarterback that was drafted in the first round the year prior to him coming out. Kenny Pickett basically was a pro quarterback in college in terms of, you know, his the rhythm of his day and life as a college quarterback, in quotes. He graduated. He was a full-time quarterback at, whatever, 24 years old, like, with a really good team around him. So, like, that matters a ton. Now, I think there's this balance of this. Playing quarterback in the National Football League, I think, is the hardest position in sports. So I don't think that you can just, like, you know, roll out of bed and do it just because you're, you know, a really talented athlete. Like, you know, like time on task, right? Outliers, 10,000 hours. Like, you do need reps doing, you know, playing quarterback. And so there, I do think there's this balance of, look, a quarterback that's 20 years old. I think Sam Darnold got drafted, you know, before he turned 21. Well, he also didn't have a ton of starts under his belt in college. So I do think that there's a balance of, like, you know, the Bill Parcells commandment of, like, you'd love the guy to have 45 starts. But also, like, don't be fooled by the fact that, like, you've got a grown man, you know, who's you know, 24 years old, in some scenarios playing against 19-year-olds and, you know, and has graduated from college and isn't balancing everything that being a college student, you know, requires you to do, you know, early in your college career. So I think it's a really big deal, the age of a quarterback, but also, like, what is his environment of, okay, why is he playing well? And, like, I would say to you, and I feel strongly about this, and I've called a number of Pitt games, like, to me, Kenny Pickett was full-time football for 2 years. And
so, like, you're saying he's closer to his ceiling than a guy that might be 21?
I think he was at his ceiling.
Yeah. So that's maybe the mistake some people make. I think of the extreme situations like Chris Winkie or Brandon Whedon, who are even older because they played minor league baseball for a while. Like, it's got to happen quick for those guys, but they're fully developed, right?
Was Crouch or late? Was he older? An older quarterback?
Tim Couch?
Yeah, Crouch.
Yeah, no.
Not Tim Couch. Crouch, the quarterback for Nebraska.
Oh, Eric Crouch.
Eric Crouch. Yes.
I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember his age. I mean, that scenario was
because didn't he was that was the whole thing was is he even a quarterback? Right? Yeah. Didn't they?
He ended up winning the Heisman, right?
He won the Heisman, And then they moved him, and they didn't even let him play quarterback, right? That was a whole other.
Yeah, But I think this, like, I mean, and listen, I'll tell you, like, as a high school football coach, I can tell you, listen, there's a big difference, man. Like, year over year, there's a big difference, you know, like, and it's a big difference at every level. Like, go put a sixth grade team out there against a fifth grade team.
Yeah. It's not going to end well.
A little different.
No.
No, it doesn't. And I'm going to tell you right now, like, you know, dirty little secret and some of these, you know, some of the programs is that for sure is kids that are just way, way older. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden it's like, well, that's different. Like, you know, and that's different than, you know, a sophomore that doesn't have his driver's license yet and a sophomore that's going to vote in this election. Like, that's different. Like, it's very different. And so, you know, it, as you get older, probably a little bit like dating, like as you get older, you know, the age difference is not that big of a deal. But, like, I do still think it is a significant factor, especially when you think about, okay, well, like, not only is he older, but he's been graduated from college for a year or 2 years, and he is taking a very light class load. He's not really stepping foot on campus other than go to the football facility. And I would just say, like, that was the environment with Kenny Pickett.
Last one for you, Tim, quickly before we get you out of here. How do you evaluate Brock Bowers?
Yeah, I think he's amazing. I think when you watch him, like, it's just undisputable, like, how incredible of a player he is. You know, the route running, the run after the catch, the way ability to track the football, ability to separate. Like, to me, like, everything you see with that, you think that is a matchup nightmare. You know, the inline blocking and stuff like that, you know, probably leaves a little bit to be desired, but that's the case with most guys. They're not incredible at both things. And I think that anybody that had any doubt about it, when you watch him test, or when you see his numbers after he's tested or go through some of the drills, it's like, no, look, man, fast is fast and, you know, separating is separating. And I just know this, like, as an offensive guy, like, that is a dream, somebody like Brock Bowers.
ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck. Tim, appreciate you as always. Thanks for stopping by, and we'll catch up with you next week, draft week next week.
See you guys. Sounds good.
I appreciate it. Tim Hasselbeck, always appreciate him for stopping by on Tuesdays at noon. We'll react to what Tim had to say there. Plus, yesterday we reacted to Mark Domenech, former NFL general manager, who said on SiriusXM NFL Radio that he thinks Brock Bowers would be a slam dunk for the Titans at 7. And everyone in the text line was feeling some type of way about it. So let's react to that and see some of the concerns that you all had. Would they be concerns of ours if we were Rand Carthon, if we were the Titans general manager? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Billy, D. Mays, we are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.
Brock is there. I think that's too easy of a pick. If not, it feels like it's an offensive tackle. Could they take another pass rusher type of guy? Sure. But my gut instinct is that they want to make sure they secure the offensive line. They did what you said, right? You get a pass-catching running back on Tony Pollard. You got Tyjae Spears, who obviously can catch the ball well at the backfield. Those two will hopefully complement each other and work really well. But then they also said, hey, look, we're going to solidify our wide receiver room with Treylon Burks, but Calvin Ridley and DeAndre Hopkins. We've got three guys, three horses, so we don't have to take a wide receiver, you know, in the first round. We feel really good. So it goes back down to me. It's the three choices. It's if the tight end's there, I think it's a Stockton to Malone. I think it's a, you know, slam dunk. But if the tight end's not there, I think it's offensive tackle. And then if for whatever reason they like only one of them and that player's off the board, I think that they might be the first team to take the defensive, you know, take Dallas Turner.
That was former NFL general manager Mark Domenech on SiriusXM NFL Radio yesterday. He's saying, look, if I'm the Titans, tight end, if Brock Bowers is there, you take Brock Bowers. You take Brock Bowers over the tackle. You take Brock Bowers over the receiver. That's a slam dunk pick. And frankly, I feel very conflicted about that thought, about that idea. I'm not totally against it. I'm not anti-Brock Bowers in the slightest, because I don't know how you can watch Brock Bowers and what he did at Georgia and say absolutely freaking not. Mm-hmm. But I'm conflicted. And Willie, I think maybe you felt very similar to me, that conflicted. D-Mace, I think you felt Screw Brock Bowers, give me the left tackle.
Give me the left tackle. Yeah.
So I got a collected our thoughts in the text line on social media and the callers that called in yesterday. It felt like it was 25%, yes, go after Brock Bowers. He's a generational talent. And then 75%, are you out of your minds? Like, no Brock Bowers. And so I wanted to collect some of the reasons why there were some of our listeners that were so anti-Brock Bowers. Kind of break down, well, are those big deals to us? Because there is going to be a likely scenario at 7 that Brand Carthon is faced with this. Joe Alt or Brock Bowers? Left tackle or Brock Bowers? So I kind of collected some reasons why people are against Brock Bowers. First, the idea that, well, Kyle Pitts was the 4th overall pick. And he was kind of a bust. Like, he hasn't really done much in the NFL. Is that because of him? Is that because of the Arthur Smith offense? I don't know. Regardless, Kyle Pitts hasn't done much. And he surely hasn't done much for the 4th overall pick. So therefore, the idea is highly drafted tight ends don't work. I don't know how you guys feel about that. I don't subscribe to that belief. The same belief of, well, Isaiah Wilson didn't turn out for the Titans, so the Titans can't draft any more Georgia offensive linemen. Like, I don't subscribe to that belief personally.
Well, that's the article I sent you guys this morning, is those anecdotal things that start getting thrown around that, you know, it's one thing for one of us to say something silly like that. It's because they drafted somebody from Georgia. Stay away from offensive linemen from Georgia. Don't do that. That it's really not rational to say that.
There's good players that come out of Georgia.
This just in.
Yeah, like, right.
I would say.
News alert. So they're a good team.
But that stuff gets out there. Like, there's the article that I sent you from The Athletic, which is, it's to me, it really got me thinking this morning. But it starts off with an anecdote of a guy that back in the day said, you guys got to watch. This is Johnny Manziel. Nobody competes like him.
How do you
Except
know that?
For Michael Jordan. Nobody's ever competed like Johnny Manziel. How do you know that? Just watch the film, man. Yeah. Just watch the film. I'm telling you. And, of course, we know what happened after that. So, you know, how do you really dive into this kind of stuff? So it really comes down to my theme of the day. I do think the age of the player is something to look for. Brock Bowers is interesting, as is Alt, by the way. They're both young. They're both just 21.
They're both three-year starters, correct? They're coming after 3 years? Yeah.
And so they've excelled at a high age, and I make the – at you know, high level at a young age. And I think that is worth something. And I make the parallel to other sports. Like, let's take Luke Evangelista, who jumped up and made an immediate impact his first year in the AHL, surprisingly so. You know, he's not a wonder kind like Connor Bedard, who at 18 is just, or like LeBron, you know, Connor McDavid, those rare guys, Kobe Bryant, who are ready to jump right in there. That's a whole separate category. But Evangelista started doing well at age 20 in the AHL, and you're like, wow, that's a quick development path. That's a sign that he's on his way to something good. It doesn't always play out that way, but I pay special attention to that as opposed to somebody who's a little bit older. And in minor league baseball, that is a huge thing, to the point where back when I was playing in the minors for the Blue Jays, there were a lot of players – mostly Latin players that were making themselves younger than they actually were, because they knew, and they were able to do it because the birth records at the time were, you know, kind of people weren't paying attention, a little sketchy. Yeah, and you could kind of make up your own, and you could say I'm 18, when in reality that person was sometimes 20. But the scouts were like, "Wow, look at this guy. He's 18. What's he going to be like when he's 19? What's he?" But I see with Bowers, maybe with Alt as well, but I see, look, he's just scratching the surface, right? He's young. He's going to get better. I think that – so if you think he's special and he's a matchup terror, you know, positionless football, I don't care what position you want to call him, if he creates ridiculous matchups, okay. If that's how you evaluate him, then you have to consider that.
Yeah, you got to consider, you know, just about everything when players like Brock Bowers is sitting right there for the drafting. Do you draft Bowers, who can be a potential, you know, impact player right away, especially in this league, the way the passing game is? Or do you draft the left tackle that he's going to be an impact player too, but you may not – people – fans may not notice his impact because he's just an offensive lineman. So as long as my quarterback is not getting sacked, I'm good. I'm not going to talk about you. I'm cheering because the ball's down the field and he's catching the pass.
And I think we've been living in the offensive line, literal trenches over the past couple of years that maybe we should appreciate the quarterback being upright.
Exactly.
A little bit more than we have.
When Brock Bowers is there, and that's why I was, vehemently saying, I'm taking the tackle. I understand Brock Bowers' ability to be a matchup problem because of the new NFL, and he's pretty much positionless in a sense. Skilled positionless. Like, he's not really a tight end. He's not really a receiver. You can just put him anywhere, just about, and he can make a play. So I understand that. But like I told you, Caroline, you need that tackle. And if he's there, the guy that you want, if he's there, you got to – it's almost like you got to take him.
Well, yeah. There's so many dynamics because I was listening to all of the talk. And look, it happens every year, but – if the McCarthy thing is real, right, they are speculating that it's almost a no-brainer that the quarterbacks are 1-2-3.
I can't believe that.
1-2-3.
Well, I can't imagine 1-2-3-4.
Yeah. That's
three. Yes, that's a no-brainer.
1-2-3, you guys agree it's a no-brainer?
It's a no-brainer. That's
okay, so then the fourth pick, a lot of people are saying somebody's going to go up to four and grab
J.J. McCarthy or whoever quarterback.
Yeah, and McCarthy is probably the name you're hearing the most. Mm-hmm. But that's going to create something for the Titans that's really interesting. Is they're going to have their pick of special athletes, right? Malik Nabers is only 20.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting. So they were debating this morning about who's better, Nabers or Harrison, right? So you got one of those guys could fall in your lap, or Bowers probably will be there, right? And Alt probably will be there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you could have a lot of special guys where you're thinking, this guy's special. This guy's isn't. These guys don't come around the pike very often. And just because all these teams have to get a quarterback. And then the other part that's this very big part of this article is there was a study done from every draft pick from 1988 to 2004 that said that your overwhelming success rate is better if you trade down. Trading down or for future picks because you're getting more picks.
Mm-hmm.
Over time, it's better to do it that way. So they may have all these options on the table. They might have an unbelievable decision to make when it falls to them,
and
especially if McCarthy goes before they pick, right?
If J.J. McCarthy go, really either way, in either scenario, let's say J.J. McCarthy doesn't go at 4 or 5 or 6, that opens up a lot of options. If he does go at 4 or 5 or 6, that opens up a lot of options. That pushes players down to the Titans at 7, or it might eliminate options that, let's say, Cardinals go 4, Marvin Harrison. Like a lot of mock drafts say that they will. Let's say 5, the Chargers take Joe Alt. And then at 6, the Giants take Malik Nabers. Now what do you do? Now where do you go? But let's continue that conversation coming up next, because we get a lot of thoughts on the Brock Bowers side of things. One way or another, people
feel some type of way. Could you trade down and get Bowers?
And that's another aspect of it. Of it's easy to say, well, just trade down and get Bowers. Well, one, do you have a trading partner? And two, is there a guarantee that Brock Bowers is going to be there wherever you trade down to? There's nothing is guaranteed. Because you could say, okay, well, the Titans could trade back with the Vikings, so the Vikings can get their quarterback at 7. Well, the Jets just took Brock Bowers at 10. So, what are you going to do at 11? All these things that, it's easy for us to say, well, I'm glad it's not my job. And frankly, I am glad it's not my job. But that is Rand Carthon's job. These are all the things that he's going to be throwing around. So let's continue that conversation coming up next. And what I want to get into, further along in the show and a little bit deeper is all of those options that could be afforded to the Titans at number 7. We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, we are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, they score big this spring with Lee Company and the Nashville Predators in the 10K Power Play giveaway. Enter for a chance to win a Kohler home generator or $10,000 toward Lee Company Home Services. That's right, a Kohler home generator or $10,000 toward Lee Company Home Services. Go online to leecompany.com/giveaway to enter. That's leecompany.com/giveaway and the 10K Power Play giveaway. Contest entries are accepted until Saturday, April 20th. Lee Company, all you need. So we've been reacting to Mark Dominic saying that Brock Bowers at 7 would be a slam dunk. And one reason why I think a lot of Titans fans didn't like that idea was the Kyle Pitts effect is what I'm going to call it. You take a tight end that high, Kyle Pitts has underachieved in the league, especially based off of where his draft position was. Therefore, tight ends should not be drafted that high. I don't necessarily subscribe to that belief because every instance is different. Every offense is different. You know, let's say Kyle Pitts was drafted somewhere else. Maybe Kyle Pitts would be Travis Kelce, George Kittle, you know, well, Kyle Pitts.
He started off as Travis Kelce. But you got to, like you said, you got to understand the circumstances. Everything is not created equal.
Yeah.
You got to understand the circumstances. Pitts have been through this carousel of quarterbacks. But his first year, he had over 1,000 yards. Average 15 yards per game.
Really?
Yes. So I don't understand where people getting this narrative of he hasn't been worth. He hasn't been worth it because their quarterback has been crap. All the quarterbacks they have, why you think they're in the market? Why you think they had to go get Kirk Cousins? Mm-hmm. Because they were not getting quarterback play. You can't look at the isolated number and say, well, he hasn't performed up to the spot he was drafted.
Expectations.
Yeah. Well, he did the first year. 1,000 yards, 15.1 yards per catch for a tight end. He played all 17 games, 68 receptions. But then after that, it started going down. Well, he missed some games second year. He played all games last year. But the quarterback position was horrid. So he can only do what he can do. He doesn't get the ball and throw it to himself.
Yeah.
So I don't look at Kyle Pitts. I think Kyle Pitts is a damn good tight end.
Yeah.
And you're going to see how good he is when Kirk Cousins start throwing him the ball. Then you will really get what you thought you were going to get in Kyle Pitts consistently, unless injury is involved. But Kyle Pitts, let's put him aside because he doesn't fit into that narrative of, oh, we're not going to draft a tight end because look at what Kyle Pitts did. No, Kyle Pitts started off strong. Their quarterback play was horrible. Every year he was there, basically, but he fought through it. Look at every wide receiver in Atlanta. Look at their stats. It's not good.
Kyle Pitts, by the way, is younger than Bo Nix.
Wow.
He's played 3 years NFL.
He played 3 years.
He's younger than Bo Nix. This is why I talk about the age as I think needs to be talked about more, and I don't know if football evaluators, how they're working that in. But I would still say Kyle Pitts has room
to develop,
right?
Yeah.
He's still at an age where, like, okay, get the right people, right offense. I'm not giving up on him yet. And like you said, he's shown it. He's got a 1,000-yard season under his belt.
I'm not giving up on him, and nor am I going to give up on Brock Bowers because of him. That's a complete moot point. The second thing that people brought up was, well, you have Chigakonkwo and Josh Wiley on the roster. And I could say, well, why go out and get Calvin Ridley when you have Mason Kinsey on the roster? That's no disrespect to Mason Kinsey, no disrespect to Chig and Josh Wiley, because we heard from Brian Callahan, and he seems really excited and encouraged about some of these young tight ends. But you can always upgrade. If you have the opportunity to upgrade, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, if we're entering into a different, like, situation with the Titans, where the needs were not so grand, then yes, a Brock Bowers to me would be a realistic option to go get. But here's why, sort of, especially not in this situation, I wouldn't get him. But here's why. Because you have his type on your team already. He needs, like, I think he's going to be a really good tight end. But he's, essentially, he and Chig are the same.
Chig, like, can't catch the football.
Chig can't catch the football. We got to remember, this is Chig. He was entering in his second year. He went through this quarterback up and down the same thing. People don't understand how difficult that can be for a pass catcher when the quarterback is being changed all the time. The offensive coordinator don't know when to use you, how to use you, and why to use you like they did last year. I don't know how many times I got on this airwaves and said, please throw Chig the ball. Let him prove to you that he can't play. And the second half of the season, he proved to them that he can.
He became an option.
Exactly. He became a huge option because he's getting used to that game, that second year. We expect him, we expect Chig, oh, he should have it. Mm-hmm. It's 2 years in, he should have it. Everybody doesn't progress the same way, especially when you're having a quarterback carousel and you're having an OC carousel as well.
Yeah.
Chig Okonkwo has two OCs in 2 years. Two OCs in 2 years and three quarterbacks.
I hear you. And I think that that's absolutely a factor here. But still, but Brock Bowers is better tight end than Chig.
Brock Bowers is a, like, right now, if you would put them
projects
both. Yeah,
to
projects to be. But they have the same skill set. I need somebody. If I had a Chig, I want a Gronk. Big guy, catch the football, but it could be an inline blocker, too. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to bring in another guy that's not an inline blocker. Brock Bowers is not going to block anyone no better than Chig Okonkwo. So if I'm going to draft another tight end, mm-hmm. I'm drafting someone different from Chig Okonkwo, someone that's going to give me inline blocking as well as catching, not just another Chig Okonkwo. Yeah, he may be better than Chig, but he's Chig. That's essentially what? Same height, probably same speed, same skill set in a sense. Will he project to be better? Possibly, yes. We don't know. But he's the same sort of prototype. I need a different prototype. I got a Benz over here. I need a truck.
I would take Brock Bowers over Chig Okonkwo.
I mean, I
know
where you're
coming from.
Yeah, I would. If we were drafting both guys right now, I'm drafting Brock Bowers all day, every day.
7 days a week and twice
exactly.
on Sunday. But the third point that everyone brings up, because I don't subscribe to the Chig and Josh Wiley thing. If you can't upgrade, you should. I don't mm-hmm. subscribe to the Kyle Pitts thing. Like, not every first-round tight end is going to be one way or another, is going to be a bust or a boom. The one that I do subscribe to is he doesn't play left tackle. And that's a good enough reason to say no, not just to Brock Bowers, but to several other prospects in this draft. He's not a left tackle.
It's like, can I ask
He's not Joe Alt.
Can I ask you a question? I'm like, yeah. Does he play left tackle? No. All right. Well, next question. Get me somebody else. Give me the tackle then. If Brock Bowers can play left tackle, then he could be on our team.
And Skylar Texan says, this team has struggled at offensive line play, specifically left tackle, for at least two full seasons now. If Joe Alt is on the board at 7, they have to take him. If they take somebody else and leave Alt on the board, they better have a damn good plan at left tackle or this fan base will lose their minds.
Yeah, I got a point.
Like, I wholeheartedly agree with that. As intriguing of a prospect as Brock Bowers is, or Malik Nabers for that matter, if he's there at 7, it's so hard for me to not address
that left
tackle position.
Worry Wart Willie steps in, and he gets worried.
Worry Wart Willie would like to see them get more picks. I somewhere in there, whether it's
even
trade down from
there?
Whether it's trade down from 7, let's look at it this way. Mm-hmm. If they hit on 7, but they get nothing else the rest of the draft, it's still not what they need. Like, it's essential that they need somebody good with the first pick. Mm-hmm. But they need more players. They need depth. They need more picks. They lack picks. Mm-hmm. That article really got me thinking. Mm-hmm. I've always kind of thought that, but after reading it, I'm even more reinforced that if there's a way to get more throws at the dartboard. You guys laughed at me when they traded the 7th-round pick for Nick Folk. You're like, come on, Willie.
7th-round
pick? Who cares? 7th-round pick. And, of course, it worked out well. But
they gave that 7th-round pick away.
Right. You just never know who you're going to get in the 7th round. Or you wheel more picks into moving up if there's a guy that you like. But the picks they got for Byard, for example, that's going to be really helpful. It's going to feel good to have those picks when this draft rolls around.
What is that? Was it a
fifth? It's a fifth, right?
Fifth and a sixth.
Okay.
Which replaced draft picks that had already chewed up, right? They had already burned their own picks, so they needed to replace those picks. So that was just getting those back. So they need extra picks. Mm-hmm. Not having the 3rd-round pick is a big hole. If they could get that back, that would be big.
You mentioned an article in The Athletic. It kind of breaks down maybe the fallacy of the NFL draft and those who do the picking. The idea, the billion-dollar question, rather, of how do you draft? What is the correct draft strategy? Well, that's exactly what this article addresses. And we'll get into that coming up next, maybe what we learned from this article, how we could apply that to the Titans draft strategy this season. We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, DeMay, say tune into 94.9 The Fan today as the Nashville Sounds take on the Omaha Storm Chasers at First Horizon Park. Pregame at 6:20, first pitch at 6:35, with coverage also available on 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks Family Leisure and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning.